from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, broadcasting from the basement bunker. I have had a busy week and a bit of a cold that I'm dealing with, so I thought, why not just broadcast from the bunker and not expose DC Taylor, because he is so important to the radio world that he cannot risk getting a cold and ruining that beautiful voice that he has. DC, how are you today?
I appreciate your consideration, Bill. Thank you. Good morning, guys.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to work with you, DC. And after a few week hiatus, Matt Henderson has cleared some time in his schedule to join us again. Matt, how are you doing?
I have, Bill. I'm doing well. It's good to be back with you guys. It's another beautiful day in central Pennsylvania in October, so I'm glad to be here. People have missed me and missed you guys, so it's good to be back talking all good things on shale gas and all the wonderful things that we've been doing in this industry.
Well, speaking of all the wonderful things we've been doing in the industry, you've been pretty busy over the last couple of weeks, and that's why you haven't been able to join us. You've become quite the road warrior with a number of presentations, a number of conferences. You did participate in the popular Marcellus Shale Coalition annual meeting. I didn't have a chance to get out to Shale Insight this year, but I know you were there, and I think you even presented. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Shale Insight up in Erie, Pennsylvania, and what you discussed during your presentation?
Sure. I appreciate the opportunity. So as you mentioned, it was great to kind of get back to these in-person events. Insights last year was held virtually, as we know basically everything was. And they ventured to Erie, PA, which did not need my passport despite rumors. But on the bayfront, waterfront up there, I mean, it was a beautiful week. The weather was great, which I know in October or late September, early October can be questionable. But it was great to see a lot of familiar faces, good old friends, and you were missed. You and your group were definitely missed up there. But a lot of the discussion was around environmental, ESG, cutting emissions, and it was a great story being told about what the industry is doing. And I'm this, that the industry has always been proactive in reducing emissions, because the flip side of it is also, reducing emissions equals, more profits. We're not in the business of, letting those molecules go to the atmosphere, because then we lose money. But it was great to hear from a lot of the companies what they are doing, what they've been doing, kind of telling their story, and this environmental social governance is a new twist, I would say, from Wall Street pushing it. But the industry has been doing this all along. As you mentioned, I had the opportunity to present for a project I've been working on called Shale Power. So our initiative is helping to connect manufacturers with the shale energy supply chain. It's from the drillers, the midstream, and doing a fair amount in the downstream with the plastics, the shale petrochemical facility. And what we had was a good group of manufacturers representing Southwest PA, Ohio, and Northern West Virginia. And they were just talking about what they're doing and some of their capabilities. And I tell you, it's pretty diverse, pretty interesting. We went from a company, an environmental company, PMET, Pittsburgh-based, where they're doing a software taking in all data from, when we build a pipeline. And you've been involved in that as well. And the welds from the heat maps, who welds it, where's the actual pipeline in, how deep is it, all this data, the environmental inspections, all of this data, they're capturing it and putting it into this database. I do a fair amount of work with, midstream here, and, we have a lot of paper, and, this guy's kind of come up with a way to put it all electronically, so you can click on and have all that data. And as we know, data is very powerful, having this information. Other companies, just talking about their valves and how they're trying, improving them continually to kind of reduce the emissions, reduce the leakage. Had a pretty interesting company called High Torque, talks about a way of, you know, torquing these valve sites. And, you know, anytime when, you know, you've seen these, you know, connections with, you know, 24 different bolts, and, you know, we have humans doing that, going from, you know, crisscross, tighten them down. They have a kind of a pretty, I guess it's a patented technology where you're getting constant pressure and you're kind of doing them all at once, where you're going to flatten that valve, or not the valve, but the gasket in there evenly. So, you know, just some very interesting companies, you know, trying to continue to help improve the industry in terms of, you know, more efficiencies, you know, doing it safer, doing it, you know, again, quicker, but keeping the safety factor in mind. And, you know, sometimes what, you know, where we're at right now, we know the price of natural gas is up, and, we do know it's going to continue, you know, go up, but what goes up, it always ends up coming down at some point. So, you know, so these, you know, during the last couple of downturns, we saw these companies, you know, just across the basin really step up to, you know, help these, you know, help the industry become more efficient. And, it was, you know, the atmosphere out there, you know, was very, say, optimistic, you know, just the fact that, you know, and I know we've talked, you know, on the show and offline too, a lot about, you know, with the new administration, you know, and their focus on moving to renewables, moving to hydrogen, moving to this clean economy, what was this going to do to oil and gas? And my feeling is, and kind of the general consensus was, you know, the realization is there. Maybe the administration will admit it, but we need oil and gas. Oil and gas drives, you know, the renewables. We can't turn off the switch and shut off all the gas power plants overnight and, you know, switch to the, you know, say the hydrogen economy, or switch to solar or wind at this point. So, it was great. Like I said, met a lot of people I haven't seen for a while, but I think from the industry's perspective, it's, you know, very, very, you know, optimistic on, you know, how do we continue to be a solution out there. So, yeah.
Well, it sounds like it was a great time. Two quick questions I had about the conference. Again, I wasn't able to go up there, just too much going on. I was actually down in Washington, D.C. in Harrisburg those days. How was the attendance? I heard the attendance was quite strong, given everything we've gone through the last, you know, 18 months to 2 years. And tell us a little bit about Erie. I have never been to Erie, but I heard that the riverfront, not the riverfront, whatever they call it, the lakefront where it's at, was beautiful. The venue was great too, but tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the attendance was strong. I don't know if they ended up at 600-700 or so in person, which was strong. As we know, a lot of our peers are still on a travel restriction. A lot of companies who maybe send 10, 15 people, you know, could not send them this year. So, and the location was tough. So I think it was very strong considering the, you know, everything that's going on. But in the location, I tell you, it was beautiful. So I got a little history up there because, you know, my brother Pat, you know, we have a friend who actually, he lives in Erie and is from there, and was really explaining how where we were located at the, you know, the hotels, you know, that convention center area used to be like a dumping ground. I mean, it was, you know, not called an industrial wasteland, but it was kind of a forgotten area. And I mean, they've cleaned it up. Businesses are thriving. I, you know, in the morning went for a couple walks, you know, just downtown and around. You know, a lot of the shops are open, and you know, the town is you know, very inviting. And I have to say, and I don't know that it was recorded or if it's available, but the mayor of Erie kind of does, you know, they always do the welcome. And if any mayors or any, you know, public official out there was listening, they were to learn exactly how you welcome somebody to your location, you promote the location, and you encourage people to come back. Because I should have had his name down, but the Erie mayor was excellent and really making everybody feel welcome, promoting, you know, all the local businesses, you know, what they have in that area, that region. And I wouldn't be surprised surprised. I know the MSC is still considering where to go, but I wouldn't be surprised to go back, because it was nice to have the mayor inside the facility welcoming us and thanking us for spending our money versus being outside with the protesters.
I was going to say Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, right? We had both cases, the mayor joining the folks outside protesting and blocking the entrance and just acting like total losers, to be honest, especially with what the energy industry has brought to Pennsylvania, into the region, especially in Pittsburgh, with so many great companies headquartered out that way and doing great work. No, it's a phenomenal. And we appreciate, of course, all the work you're doing. And of course, the update on Shale Insight. And hopefully next year we'll have to make our schedules work, get back out there, and maybe even broadcast again. And in years past, I brought all the equipment and we were able to interview and meet with folks and get a lot of content from Shale Insight. It just didn't work out this year, of course, but great update. I appreciate it. A couple of news stories here. High prices, winter shortages underscore the role of hydrocarbons in society. This is from The Hill, and it's an opinion piece. But the question is, do you think it's going to be cold this winter? I personally think so. And this is a double-edged sword, because weather temperatures, whether they're above or below freezing, it looks increasingly likely like our ability to keep our homes and workplaces warm will be limited or, quite honestly, more expensive. Adjusting the thermostat may not be enough, and there could actually be shortages of fuel as well as high prices. And we are talking likely rather than certainly, but of course, this is serious. And Matt, if I could pick your brain on that real quick, the idea that our White House, in one hand, is shutting down oil and natural gas development on federal lands, blocking pipelines, encouraging the speedy transition to renewables, on the other hand, begging OPEC to do more to produce more fuel to help lower our gasoline prices, and they think we should be exporting more natural gas around the world to help other countries that are struggling, and we can't even fix what's going on here at home.
Yeah, exactly. I was reading an article this week, you know, where the White House, I guess the title talked about the White House is that talking to oil and gas companies, and then this, you know, what's her name, the White House spokesman says, no, we're not. You know, it's like, yeah, why are we, you know, again, we're looking outside the borders for solutions when, you know, they're right here. You know, we, like you said, we produce enough. We have more, you know, they keep talking about, well, it takes 6 months, 9 months to drill a new well, get new gas to market. Well, as we all know, there's a lot of gas that is kind of waiting in place because we can't move it from point A to point B. And to your point, you know, I mean, we've lucked out to some degree that we're almost, you know, what, mid-October. We're in the heating season now. And it's been a very mild, to say, you know, transition here. But yeah, we're going to get in trouble, I think. And, you know, New York's, you know, talking about some issues. I mean, overseas, you know, they're running short on energy and manufacturing's cut back. And I mean, this is just, it's amazing, I guess, how quick we put ourselves in this position. And it's sad, the fact that we know we could solve this problem if, you know, we just had some, you know, open and, you know, honest discussions on how we can, you know, safely move, you know, these hydrocarbons around. You know, I know, you know, I'm still in a location with heating oil, and, you know, I'm paying a lot more. I will say I gambled and did not fill up in the spring, because usually you can hit it in, you know, the middle of the summer. And here I am, and, you know, I'm going to be paying that premium. And
you're probably going to be paying, what, like 50 to 80% more, maybe even double in some instances. That's how ridiculous this is. And just like you were saying, this is a situation that's self-imposed. This is 100% what Joe Biden said he was going to do. And the Biden administration said they were going to do. They did it. Turned out to be worse than they expected. And now we're in a mess that could have been completely avoided. I mean, I keep laughing about the OPEC thing. And you can argue, sure, it takes months to get oil and gas out of the ground when the wells are drilled. So what if they open up federal lands right now? Will it make a difference right now? No. But one thing that would have made a difference is the damn pipeline Keystone XL that they shut down, right? Because that was moving product from producers in Canada down to the Gulf Coast for refinement and export, refinement for our use and export or whatever else that needs to be done with it. But the reality was that was another source of this commodity, and now we're relying on OPEC. And I don't know if you've seen in the news at all backups at the different ports of trying to get products in. Yeah. So it's not even like oil and natural gas products. We're talking about consumer goods. I mean, how many cargo ships are backed up at ports of call and they can't even get the product in?
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, then you've got those increased costs. I mean, it's what, 7X, 8X as much to ship product here. And then when it's here, we can't even get it. And yeah, I mean, again, it's, you know, the media is talking about, you know, all these shortages we're going to have this winter, you know, not just, you know, Christmas and stuff, but, you know, we're going to be in a toilet paper or some consumables, you know, shortages out there. So it's, and to your point, you know, this could have been avoided very easily.
Could have been. I got two stories here about new technology that I thought, and then we can jump on to some other topics like hydrogen. But electric fracturing is catching on, but environmentalists are not impressed. I do get a kick out of this story. It's kind of a trend we're seeing where hydraulic fracturing companies are basically using all available resources. And one of them is, in certain areas, the ability to use electricity, either from the grid or setting up a cogen on site, using the natural gas on site to create electricity, running the engines, offsetting, you know, tens of thousands, tens of millions of gallons of diesel per year. I just get a kick out of it that environmentalists aren't impressed and they feel that shouldn't be happening because it still allows us to hydraulically fracture. And the other thing that I thought was interesting is Nabors, a big drilling company, has tested a fully robotic oil rig for Exxon in the Permian Shale, which is really interesting when you think about it. I guess the rig features giant arms that are able to replace some of the work of field workers. So it's kind of interesting, and I'm curious to see if that will catch on and how long it'll take to catch on. But is it more efficient? Is it safer? Is it more effective? Can they operate in more inclement weathers, you know, cold days or hot days? Who knows? But technology is certainly evolving for this industry. And I know another area that we've talked about, Matt, hydrogen is another one of those areas that definitely could take off. What do you think about hydrogen these days?
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting, you know, we learn more and more about hydrogen, and we know this is not a brand new technology. You know, DOE and Nettle and, you know, companies have been studying, exploring this, you know, using hydrogen for decades and decades. And as I read more about this, you know, you find, you know, I learned recently, so, you know, there's the talk of switching power plants, and there's, I guess, roughly 17 different power plants across the U.S. that have announced they're going to, you know, either be a full hydrogen, you know, generating electricity off 100% hydrogen, or they will be slowly switching and do like a 30-70 blend. What I found very interesting is, you know, and those out there who understand the science better than I is, you know, methane, you know, which is currently being used, or the natural gas, has 3.3 times more energy. You know, so if you think about it, the CH4, you know, has the four bonds versus, you know, just the hydrogen out there. So, you know, I'm thinking out there, you know, and then the people, you know, the push to this clean hydrogen economy is, so let's just assume overnight we switch all of our natural gas power plants to hydrogen from natural gas. So we take that 1,000 megawatt power plant that's, you know, the new, you know, new ones are being built. We switch that to hydrogen, you know, we now cut our megawatts down from 1,000 to, you know, 300, 305, whatever that math works out to. So, you know, we are not in a society that's going to say, okay, I'm going to cut my energy consumption one third, right? We've tried this in the 70s and the 80s. I mean, that's always been the push to conserve and use less and use less. And it's just not, you know, for better.
Well, that only works if your population doesn't grow, if your demands don't grow, if your manufacturing base don't grow. But I mean, again, it's the same argument of, we don't need more pipelines. We have enough right now. Well, no, we don't, because they were built in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s for the then populations.
Right. So like I said, we're going to use more energy. We're going to use more power. So, I mean, you know, if we're going to switch, you know, that's where, you know, people don't have these honest conversations. It's kind of like, you know, we've all been at these township meetings and people are posing, you know, oil and gas and development as they're driving in their vehicles that are predominantly made and are definitely made safer and more efficient because of oil and gas. And, you know, it's just a hypocrisy out there. So, yeah, again, I think hydrogen may have a place, but it can't be forced upon us. Nothing bad with more investment dollars being put out there, as long as they're being put out there, you know, say fairly, and it's going to advance this technology. But we're not going to be at the point to, you know, where, you know, we can cut our energy consumption. You know, it's just not going to happen. You know, like you said, even if the population doesn't increase, more and more people are using more energy, whether it be for manufacturing, for heating, for this, you know, whatever it might be. So I don't know. It's kind of, to me, it's, you know, that conversation has just continues to morph, you know, from, well, we're opposed to oil and gas. We're going to talk about hydrogen, but we're only going to talk about certain things about it that make sense. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, this ESG, you know, was EHS. Now we were is being done, you know, and very environmentally safe. You know, the health and safety has been proven time and time again that it's a safe process. It can be done safely. I mean, just like any process, there's always issues. But now let's switch over to ESG. And, you know, as and I think we're going to have some, you know, Kevin Sunday was talking at the hearing, I think a week ago. And I don't know if it's him or who made the comment is, you know, as this industry continues to move, you know, to reducing the methane intensity, you know, going to, you know, it's not just the Wall Street, but the communities, the legislators are saying we need to reduce our emissions. The industry continues to do that. Will that satisfy them? I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with you. I don't. It's the same thing. If I could jump onto a tangent there with STEM learning, science, technology, engineering, and math. And then what, of course, do? They instead of just riding that wave and its success, they add A to it and create STEAM. So yeah. It's science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. And then I think they're trying to add something back in there. And then I'm laughing. I'm like, so we're basically creating school again, right?
Yes.
Education yes. again. We're pumping yes. a whole bunch of money into that instead of pumping it back into where it should be, or just letting the things work the way they should. Like, stop artificially controlling something just because it's working. So it's very frustrating in those regards, but that's always the case. Well, something that's not frustrating, something that I know a lot of people enjoy, it's time for Fender's Fast Facts. Rusty, you've joined us. What do you have for us today?
Bill, thanks, and DC, and a very important date to remember, maybe not for good things, but this was the date back in 1973, October 17th, the big gas crisis in the United States.
Okay.
And I just got my first brand new 1973 Ford Pinto powder blue, uh-huh. and I was the guy waiting in the gas lines with either an odd or an even license plate number. The last number was odd or even, depending on the days. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, it was odd, and then Tuesdays, Thursday, a whole big deal. Then they went to the inspection stickers. If you had a 1, 2, 3, or 4, they went by that. Big deal on October 17th, 1973.
73. Let me ask you something, yeah. Rusty. So I remember vaguely at 5 years old in 1979, I remember sitting in long lines at gas stations. Was that, did that extend the whole time?
Or it came back again. Very good. In 1979, I said the history repeated itself.
Okay.
In 79, they had another.
There's another one. Okay.
Exactly. Another blowback from this. So exactly.
Okay. Right.
And I was going to get to that as well. Very, okay. very good, DC. Right,
go ahead.
Because at that time I was working out of town, 79, and I had to, it wasn't as bad, but the prices were outrageous. From what was like $1.19 a gallon went to like $2.40. You got to realize that was 40 years ago. $2.40 a gallon.
Jeez.
Very good, though. Very good, DC.
Okay.
Now, the OPEC oil embargo, October 17, 1973, the guts of this. The 12 OPEC members agreed upon the embargo, and over the next 6 months, oil prices sextupled. Prices remained at higher levels even after the embargo, which ended in March 1974. Mm. Blowback from this happened in September of 1979 through 1980, when once again a review of the history of oil prices, it was an oil embargo once again. In 1979, the prices went from $25.97 a barrel, so $25 a barrel, to $46.35 a barrel.
Okay.
So that was the 1979-1981.
Uh-huh.
The embargo sent gas price, of course, through the roof. The embargo contributed to what they call stagnant inflation.
Sure.
In response to the oil crisis, DC, the United States took steps to become increasingly energy dependent. Richard Nixon in 72, he prompted the embargo when he decided to take the United States off the gold standard. I don't know too much about the standards on that deal, but that was the whole deal behind OPEC getting mad at the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the oil embargo widely blamed for causing the 1973 to 1975 recession, one of the greatest 10 recessions on earth. It worsened the recession. First, higher gas prices meant consumers had less money to spend on others' goods and services. The lower demand of gasoline also weakened customer confidence in the economy. The big deal was, well, there were two big deals that came out of Nixon's order. It reduced the national speed limit. I know you've heard about this, even though you weren't alive.
Right.
It went from 65 and 75 down to 55.
Sure.
Nationwide, California to Maine.
Yep.
And that was just to conserve gas. And he instituted one more thing for 1 year. And this was bizarre. And it has to do with the time of day. Do you remember this? Because I sure did. And it was, and Richard Nixon is my favorite guy. But uh-huh. This was one of the dumbest things ever done. 1973 to 1974. I'm surprised you don't have it at the tip of your tongue because you're into this trivial stuff.
Time of day.
Think about the time of day.
I got it. I'm drawing a complete blank.
I know. Here. See, a lot of people, this gets by a lot of people, but I went through it because in 73, 74, I was a senior at Pittston Area High School. Nixon instituted daylight saving time round the clock for 1 year, meaning when I was going to catch the bus in Duryea on Foot Avenue to go to Pittston Area at 7 o'clock in the morning, it was pitch black until 8:30 in the wintertime.
Till 8:30, yeah. Okay.
Can you imagine that? And it was lighter later in the day. Just think about the way the summer is. The summer is light in the morning, light until 8:30 at night.
Right.
Well, this was dark in the morning. And it was dark at 4:30 in the afternoon. That was one of the dumbest things. We were walking literally with flashlights to get the bus at 7 o'clock in the morning because the sun didn't come till like 8 o'clock.
So what? That was supposed to be some sort of energy conservation.
Big energy saving thing. Once again. In conjunction with the 55 Arrive Alive deal.
Sure.
But that was on this very big weekend. Surprised he didn't remember that about the deal. Yeah, took up by so many people. And again, it probably would have gotten by me if I wasn't one of the kids walking down the street, you know, like falling over dead dogs and things at that hour of the morning.
Yeah.
But the big oil embargo, 1973, D.C.
All right, Rusty. Well, there you go. This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and I'm D.C. Taylor. Stay here for more.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Get your new roof installed with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company at NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental, health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt, you could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too, because it is before taxes.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. Last week, we brought you John Udicek, State Senator John Udicek, and State Senator Gene Yaw's hearing on consumer and economic impacts of failing to invest in Pennsylvania's natural gas infrastructure. We brought you a few of the testimonies before that. We have a few more of those testimonies to share right now. representing consumer protection, Christine Maloney Hoover, interim acting consumer advocate, Ray Cantor, vice president of government affairs at the New Jersey Business and Industry Association, and Mike Butler, a friend of this program. He's the executive director of the Consumer Energy Alliance here in PA. They'll share their testimony on why more energy is needed by consumers, whether it be you and I as homeowners or business owners, whatever the case. Energy is needed here in this Commonwealth, and we need to stop destroying the infrastructure projects to get it where it needs to go. Enjoy their testimony now.
Thank you. I would like to thank Chair Utechak, Chair Yaw, Chair Capoletti, Chair Kmita, and members of the committee. My name is Christine Maloney Hoover, and I'm currently serving as the interim acting consumer advocate in the Pennsylvania Consumer Advocates Office. Thank you for having me here today to discuss the impact on natural gas prices paid by Pennsylvania consumers as a result of the recent PennEast pipeline suspension. The focus of my testimony today is on the impact of current market gas prices and conditions on rates and the OCA's role in reviewing those natural gas cost rates before the Public Utility Commission. The OCA was established by the General Assembly in 1976 to represent consumers' interests before the PUC and other state and federal agencies and courts that regulate the activities of Pennsylvania's public utilities. In representing Pennsylvania's utility consumers, my primary responsibility is to ensure that Pennsylvania consumers enjoy safe, adequate, and reliable utility services at reasonable prices. On an annual basis, our office files a formal complaint in each large natural gas utility's annual purchase gas cost filing, under Section 1307F of the Public Utility Code. Under Pennsylvania law, each utility purchases natural gas and delivery services in the wholesale market that are necessary to meet its demand obligation and passes on those costs dollar for dollar to ratepayers through the PGC mechanism. The OCA participates in that annual review to ensure that these purchases are reasonably designed and timed to meet the least cost procurement standard required under the statute, that the commodity is competitively procured and produces affordable rates. Each year, our office hires expert witnesses to review the company's filings, and that involves extensive discovery and development of expert testimony and recommendations when needed to ensure that ratepayer interests are protected. Included in that review is the purchase of all the commodity, along with a review of the pipeline and storage contracts that are required to ensure that natural gas is delivered safely and reliably when needed, especially during the winter heating season. I provided some information about the current trend of gas prices in my testimony, but to summarize that, it shows that natural gas pricing has moved up considerably from the early part of the pandemic when it was at historic lows. So these wholesale market price changes are or will be reflected in utility rates. And while it's difficult to estimate the impact, our expert witnesses calculated it may, if current pricing holds, affect winter heating bills by approximately 20%. For the committee's consideration here, those increases are not and do not appear to be driven by the suspension of the PennEast pipeline, and the data shows that that increase has been in place for a number of months now. The OCA is not aware of any Pennsylvania natural gas utilities entering into contracts with PennEast for natural gas transportation service. And from a rates perspective, the PennEast project was not anticipated to supply natural gas to a significant portion of Pennsylvania's residential ratepayers, but rather was designed to move supply further east. The fact that no Pennsylvania utilities entered into contracts with PennEast that were submitted for review with the commission under the annual purchase gas cost process further suggests that it is anticipated there will be little impact on rates. It is further worth noting, and I have information in the written testimony, that the public suspension of the PennEast pipeline has not appeared to negatively impact natural gas pricing as of the time of the development of this written testimony. The OCA will continue to examine the purchase gas cost filings to determine if any issues arise related to the PennEast project suspension. but I stand ready to work with the committee, staff, members of the General Assembly, and other stakeholders to advance our energy goals for reliable, efficient, economic, environmentally sustainable, and diverse natural gas supplies at reasonable prices. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now I'll hear from Mr. Mike Butler, who is with us, and then we will, excuse me. We're going to, we have, I believe he is still on Zoom, Mr. Ray Cantor, representing the New Jersey Business and Industry Association. He is the Vice President of the Government Affairs Division. Mr. Cantor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chairman and members of the committee, for allowing me to testify here before your committee today. First of all, NJBIA is a statewide organization. We are the largest business representative of businesses in New Jersey. Our members employ about 1 million people in the Garden State. There's been a lot of criticism about New Jersey today, but I want to just let you know that I am here speaking not on behalf of the New Jersey government, but rather as businesses, as consumers of energy in our state. And as consumers, I want to thank you for supplying us with natural gas, and especially the energy revolution that has come from fracking and Marcellus Shale. Natural gas is vital to New Jersey. While we are geologically an outcrop of the Marcellus Shale formation, we have no natural gas of our own. We import all the natural gas that we use in our state. Again, and much of it is now coming from Pennsylvania and Marcellus Shale. We heat 75% of our homes and businesses using natural gas. About 45% of our electricity is developed by using natural gas as a fuel source. And despite our current administration's goals toward having a clean energy future or having zero net carbon energy by 2050, even their own energy master plans predict that we're going to need natural gas at least for the next 20 to 30 years. In reality, and when you talk to the experts in New Jersey, they know that we're going to need natural gas as a main energy supply for many more years to come. Natural gas, especially, again, coming from the Marcellus Shale, has been of tremendous benefit, to our state and to businesses in our state. As a result of closing old coal inefficient plants and transferring over to new natural gas efficient plants, we met our greenhouse gas goals, our 2020 goals, about 5 years earlier than otherwise had been anticipated. We've saved consumers from the years 2009 to 2019 about $19 billion in energy cost savings. And we've helped save manufacturing in New Jersey. From the year 1990 to about 2010, New Jersey lost about half its manufacturing base. We went from about 400,000 manufacturing jobs to about 200,000 manufacturing jobs. Once energy costs began to be lowered, and both as energy source and as a feedstock, that bleeding of our manufacturing jobs has pretty much stopped. And we have now actually had small gains in the last decade or so of manufacturing jobs here in New Jersey. We need a continued supply and a steady supply of natural gas from Pennsylvania. Our New Jersey utilities have documented and submitted evidence to our Board of Public Utilities documenting that there is a capacity need for natural gas, both to meet future needs of anticipated growth and the need for natural gas, and also as a reliability matter. Dave Taylor, I mentioned before about what happens in a cold winter. Well, we've had those cold winters, and we've had interruptions of our supply, and we're trying to avoid that in the future, which is one of the reasons why we were supporters of the PennEast project, and we're very disappointed that PennEast has decided not to pursue that project. We believe it is needed for New Jersey's energy reliability and supply in the future, and we're hoping that at some point in time, either that project or a similar one will take its place. Let me make a quick point also about permitting in New Jersey, and we could talk further in questioning about what has happened with the current administration. But New Jersey did not turn down PennEast because it failed to meet environmental conditions or because based on a water quality certificate or impacts to the environment. It never got to that point, you know, in time. The permits that were turned down were basically turned down because the applications were incomplete. And yes, they were incomplete because of the lawsuits that stymied Penn East from going out there and doing necessary surveys. The litigation absolutely had a major impact in delaying and impacting those permits. But New Jersey did not turn down those permits for environmental reasons. And while I know New York has used its water quality certificates in a way that has been used as a sword against natural gas projects, New Jersey has never used its water quality certificates in such a manner. New Jersey has very strict wetland laws, flood hazard laws, water quality laws. And if you meet those prescriptive regulatory standards, your water quality certificate comes with those other approvals. So, yeah, I would be very confident that the next pipeline coming to New Jersey and the approvals that you know it must obtain, if it meets its standards for wetlands and flood hazard and water quality, which are all laid out in prescriptive regulations, that they will get the water quality certificates. I think if this administration or another administration tried to change the rules of the game, at worst, it would end up with more litigation, which is really often the game that's being played. But you know, ultimately, those projects will be approved. So just in conclusion, New Jersey is dependent on natural gas coming from Pennsylvania. We have greatly benefited from the energy revolution of fracking in the Marcellus Shale. We're going to need natural gas, you know, for at least the next 2 to 3 decades, if not longer. And we hope that you, as leaders in Pennsylvania, continue to have a strong energy supply because New Jersey is reliant on that supply. Thank you. And I'll be happy to answer any questions at the end of the panel.
Thank you, Mr. Cantor. Now we're going to turn to our final speaker of the day, Mr. Mike Butler, the Mid-Atlantic Executive Director of the Consumer Energy Alliance.
Thank you, chairs. Thank you, members, for allowing me to participate in today's hearing. The Consumer Energy Alliance brings together consumers, producers, manufacturers to engage in a meaningful dialogue about America's energy future. Founded in 2006, Consumer Energy Alliance is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization representing virtually every sector of the U.S. economy, from the iron and steel industry to truckers, airlines, agriculture, labor unions, restaurants, chemical manufacturers, small businesses, and families across the nation. We have more than 500,000 grassroots members, including over 30,000 here in Pennsylvania, and they support a rational, all-of-the-above energy policy that utilizes all of our domestic natural resources, both traditional and renewable, while ensuring continued progress in protecting our shared environment. We've advocated for projects all across this country, and those projects have included natural gas, nuclear, wind, and solar projects. Unfortunately, across the country, and perhaps increasingly here in Pennsylvania, we're starting to witness irresponsible government policies that and proposals that would have the unfortunate consequence of increasing consumer prices and harming consumer reliability while failing to achieve the stated environmental goals. The genesis of these policy proposals are probably best enshrined in the consciousness of the Green New Deal that's proposed in Congress. These types of policies lead to higher energy bills, significant service disruptions, increased income inequality and segregation while doing little to achieve environmental progress we all desire. To be clear, the Consumer Energy Alliance supports actions that thoughtfully advance our nation toward cleaner, more environmentally responsible energy future. We believe that policies always consider the needs of consumers while leveraging and supporting the development of state-of-the-art technologies to improve our environmental stewardship, aiding the continued reductions of all emissions. However, well-intentioned but misguided attempts at environmental stewardship will lead to astronomical costs and jeopardize energy resources that are helping our nations reduce harmful emissions. A recent report that we put together identified, for example, delays and cancellations of natural gas pipeline projects have cost our nation more than $13.6 billion in lost investments, foregoing more than 66,000 jobs and more than $280 million in annual state and local tax revenue. Here in Pennsylvania, we've referenced the Penn East pipeline project as well as others, including the Northeast Supply Enhancement, Northern Access Pipelines, the Constitution Pipelines. That's cost the Commonwealth over $1.5 billion in economic activity, $11,500, 500 jobs, and $790 million in state and local tax revenue. Furthermore, this energy infrastructure construction creates and spurs demand in manufacturing, industrial sector for steel, parts, services, and other supply chain needs. Supply chains needed that were laid bare during the COVID-19 crisis that exposed a great national weakness in our supply chains and problematic and problems with over-reliance on China for key components, including components in the renewable energy sector needed for solar development and battery storage development. Ending our national supply chain vulnerabilities while putting Americans to work can and should be happening here in Pennsylvania. This is all particularly egregious to forego these jobs and tax revenues when there's enormous consumer benefit to take into account. A recent Consumer Energy Alliance report showed that in a 10-year window, Pennsylvania consumers had saved more than $30.5 billion with lower energy prices due to the bountiful reserve of natural gas in the Commonwealth. The supply of affordable energy is most critically needed for our fellow Pennsylvanians, the nearly 1.6 million of us that live at or below the poverty line. On average, Pennsylvanians spend over $3,100 on annual energy needs, a staggering sum for a low-income family. It is simply unconscionable that anti-energy development activists block projects that would help alleviate the cost to working families, low-income families, and seniors on a fixed income. For example, the PennEast pipeline that has just been stymied would have saved consumers $1.3 billion in energy costs in just 2 winters' time. During this past year, as our nation struggled with the COVID pandemic, the vital role that energy plays in our everyday lives became even more clear. From the production of personal protective equipment, fuel for our food deliveries, creation of life-saving products, and energy and pipeline supply companies stepped up in the face of this turmoil. These companies provided services to keep hospitals, first responders, grocery stores, and homes powered, often at personal risk to their workers, all to help maintain the health and safety of our nation. With all the worries many of us had to endure during the pandemic, one worry we rarely had was having to worry about not enough energy for fuel or power or food. Yet we now find ourselves deliberately sabotaging the reliability of this energy that we've all become accustomed to. All these self-inflicted economic wounds might somehow be tolerable if our nation was a laggard in environmental progress. However, nothing could be further from the truth. We at Consumer Energy Alliance refer to this environmental progress as the greatest story that's never told. Our nation has trimmed twice as much carbon dioxide from the atmosphere as any other nation. Overall, the United States has cut its overall greenhouse emissions by 12% since the 2005 baseline. In Pennsylvania alone, over the last 30 years, carbon monoxide has been reduced by 80%, nitrogen oxide by 79%, coarse particulate matter by 73%, sulfur dioxide by 96%, and volatile organic compounds by more than 61%, all while being the second largest producing natural gas state in the country. Too often, our politics and governments enable an extreme agenda against infrastructure to deliver the energy that delivers the energy we use, the energy that makes our lives easier and our environment better. The extreme anti-energy effort champions lawsuits, procedural delays, and regulatory roadblocks to stop construction, ironically stopping projects that almost always pay wages far above the national average and which, when complete, will lower energy bills and emissions in a host of communities. A key question the public should be asking of policymakers and elected officials is, why are we making it harder for regular people, small businesses, farmers, industries to get back to work and save on energy costs, especially on the heels of the COVID pandemic and economic downturn? We all want to diversify our energy resources with more renewable energy, but the evidence shows that the political goals designed to please a small, vocal minority are disconnected from the realities of engineering and construction. Energy is a fundamental right, and Pennsylvania, of all places, should lead the way to advance a regulatory agenda that recognizes that. Anything else is an energy injustice.
Thank you, Mr. Butler.
Stay here for more of the Shale Gas News. Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll take a look at the jobs, the careers available in the gas and energy industries, brought to you by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, it's time for the top five stories of the past week. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So here you go, the top five most read stories on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past 7 days. And coming in at number five last week, Northeast PA driller Rockdale Marcellus files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. A sad exclusive to share with you today. A few weeks ago, Northeast Pennsylvania driller Rockdale Marcellus filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in U.S. bankruptcy court for the Western District of Pennsylvania. The company, which owns and operates 66 producing wells on 42,897 net acres in three Northeast Pennsylvania counties with their regional headquarters in Pittsburgh, plans to auction off all of its assets, according to paperwork filed with the court. According to the Rockdale website, the company was formed with the acquisition of Shell's operated Marcellus properties in Tioga, Lycoming, and Bradford counties in Pennsylvania in 2017. The company later purchased EOG Resources Marcellus assets in 2020. Today, Rockdale Marcellus owns and operates producing wells on a contiguous acreage position of around 48,000 gross acres with about 100% working interest. Current production is about 110 MMCFD.
Multi-million cubic feet per day.
Thank you. As of March 2021, with over 100 future drilling locations identified in the highly productive Marcellus dry gas shale formation.
Rusty. Here we go with number four, DC. Update on Renovo Marcellus fired plant in Clinton County, Pennsylvania. Now, good news about the Marcellus fired power plant for Clinton County, Pennsylvania, called the Renovo Energy Center. According to the CEO of the Clinton County Economic Partnership, Mike Flanagan, the Renovo project continues with plans to locate a power plant at the former Renovo Industrial Park. And that's a direct quote. According to reports, demolition and construction will likely begin later this year on an $850 million project. Now, last fall, MDN told you that the Renovo Marcellus fired power plant had come back to life as an even bigger project that will produce 1,240 megawatts of electricity. The Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, DEP, approved the project in April, including an amended air quality permit. DC?
Okay, number three, the third most popular story over the past week at MarcellusDrilling.com. PennEast Pipeline throws in the towel. Project won't get built. Score another victory for the forces of evil, by which we mean left-wing, wackadoodle, anti-fossil fuel extremists. Just a short time ago, MDN received the statement below from PennEast Pipeline that states, in our words, they've given up. Throwing in the towel, dead. PennEast will not get built. You can't say we didn't warn you that this may happen. PennEast Pipeline, a 120-mile, primarily 36-inch pipeline that would have cost $1 billion to build and run from Dallas in Luzerne County, northeastern Pennsylvania, and terminate at Transco's pipeline interconnection near Pennington, Mercer County, New Jersey, won a huge and important victory at the U.S. Supreme Court in June. The victory allows PennEast to use eminent domain to run the pipeline across property owned or controlled by the state of New Jersey. Yet last week, or a couple of weeks ago now, PennEast notified a federal court it was withdrawing its eminent domain case against New Jersey for 42 properties the state either controls or owns. A month ago, PennEast dropped its eminent domain cases against landowners in Pennsylvania, where the project was set to begin construction. After both bits of news about pulling back eminent domain cases, we asked, what the heck is going on? We said we hoped the project would still get built, but we expressed our concerns and doubts, and we were right to do so. Rusty.
Number two, DC, big news. Ohio Utica driller Gulfport Energy looking to sell itself. Gulfport Energy, the third largest driller in the Ohio Utica Shale by the number of wells drilled, emerged from bankruptcy in May with a new board and new top management. See, Gulfport Energy emerges from bankruptcy with new board, CEO, CFO gone. in one of the former MDN reports. According to Reuters, Gulfport is shopping itself and looking for a buyer. We've never known Reuters to be wrong about these kind of insider scoops. Note that the Reuters article says Gulfport is exploring a sale. It doesn't necessarily mean Gulfport will sell itself. However, the odds are the company will sell itself. That's in our opinion, DC.
Okay, the number one most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past week. Citi predicts $6 gas in the U.S. in the fourth quarter could spike to $100 per MMBTU.
Multi-million
BTU.
British thermal.
Got it. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
While natural gas prices have always floated up and down, lately we've seen a rapid run-up in the NYMEX futures price that hit a seven-year high a couple weeks ago. Since then, the price has come down a fair bit. There has been chatter that the NYMEX price might hit $10 per MMBTU this winter if we have a particularly long and cold winter. An investment advisory note from Citigroup now says if we get a bitter cold snap, prices at the NYMEX may hit $100 per MMBTU. Citigroup is predicting the average price for NYMEX nat gas during the fourth quarter of this year will be $6, up from a previous estimate of $3.90 per MMBTU. A lot of what's driving high prices here in the U.S. is what's happening in Europe and Asia. The price for LNG in Europe is now up to $25 per MMBTU, and in Asia, it's hitting $30 per MMBTU. Those regions are in a panic because they haven't been able to store enough gas for the winter ahead. Citi says global natural gas prices could continue to go parabolic in the coming weeks and months. Okay, there you go. Sorry. Those are the top five stories. Thanks, Jim. Those are the top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email. Just go to MarcellusDrilling.com/email. And now it is time for the jobs segment. Looks exploring your careers in the gas and energy industries, brought to you by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, their wonderful new facility in Tunkhannock. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
DC Taylor, thank you. And in Pennsylvania, Penn Mechanical. Some new companies here looking for a wireline field operator. Excuse me, operators. That's plural. Plugging and abandonment. That's out of Katanning. New Park Drilling Fluids, looking for a drilling fluids specialist. Got to put that on my next resume. I'm a fluids specialist.
You like fluids, do you?
Not necessarily the kind of fluids they probably deal with, but nonetheless, it's based in Canonsburg, D.C.
Okay.
Icon Industrial, an oil and gas industrial construction safety manager. Wow, based in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
I know.
How about that?
Very nice.
Let's see, Range Resources, looking for a lease operator out of Washington, Pennsylvania. Of course, the extreme southwest corner of the state. WC Welding, looking for roustabouts. And Painters, looking for painters for Montrose. Also, CUDD, C-U-D-D Energy Services, a frac equipment operator out of Williamsport. ROC Services Company, looking for a pipeline technician, also out of Williamsport. Monarch Midstream LLC, looking for an operator for the natural gas pipeline system, headquartered in Mansfield. Excuse me. Kinder Morgan, looking for a pipeline welder. That'd be out of Cottersport, up in McKean County. And ProConnex, looking for a field operator based in Towanda. Moving to Ohio, SEI Oil Field Services, looking for multiple roustabouts and oil field service labor. It's out of Quaker City. Summit Midstream Partners, an area operations manager for Utica and Marcellus Shale out of Jacobsburg. Fortis Energy Services, looking for snubbing hands, plural, snubbing a lot of folks, roustabout work more or less. That's out of Barnesville. Estes Corporation, the natural gas compressor field service technician out of St. Clairsville. Gulfport Energy, which you just mentioned, looking for a measurement technician and a water foreman out of St. Clairsville. Encino Energy, LLC, an instrument and electrical technician out of Carrollton. Ascent Resources, a measurement analyst for calculations that's based in Cambridge. Northeast Ohio Natural Gas Incorporated, looking for an operations manager that's headquartered in Lancaster. And Husky Energy, an analyzer technician out of Lima. Got a few in West Virginia. Williams Companies looking for operations technicians, level 1 and 2 out of Grove. Diversified Gas and Oil, roustabouts, land analysts, and measurement analysts out of Charleston. Equitrans Midstream, an environmental coordinator out of Clarksburg. Key Energy Services, deckhands out of level 2 out of Buchanan. Antero Resources, looking for a contract specialist based in West Union. Marathon Petroleum, big outfit, looking for operations supervisors, three positions out of Dallas. That's out of Dallas, West Virginia. TC Energy, looking for a pipeline integrity geotechnical engineer. That's out of Charleston. And Hickory Energy Services, 15 openings for roustabouts. That's general labor based in Moundsville. Moving to New York State, Repsol, looking for an air specialist out of Horseheads. Precision Pipeline Solutions, a gas leak technician. It's actually paid training for 6 weeks as well. It's out of New Windsor. Dominion Energy, a pipeline field specialist out of Schenectady. Kinder Morgan, pipeline specialist there as well, out of the Gilderland Center. And SPX, looking for a pipeline camera inspection fiber optic field technician that's based in Hopog, out on Long Island. And those are the jobs this week, as DC mentioned, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Thank you so much for joining us here each and every week on the Shale Gas News. Of course, we're on a myriad of stations. We'll see you back here next week, same time, same radio stations. They're Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor. I'm Rusty Fender. Thank you once again for listening to the Shale Gas News.